Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. There are over 80,000 synthetic chemicals in commercial products today. Now, because of growing awareness and demands for clean and safe products, it's now common to see things that are free of parabens, phthalates, and sodium lauryl sulfates. If you go to the store, check any bottle, and chances are you'll find something that says paraben-free. But no matter how hard we try or how diligent we are about buying clean products and pesticide-free foods, it's almost impossible to avoid chemicals. And given that reality, how do we get them out of our bodies? Today's guest, Bruce Laurie, has been asked this question on an almost daily basis since the publication of his international best-selling book, Slow Death by Rubber Duck, How the Toxic Chemistry of Everyday Life Affects Our Health. Bruce wrote the book with Rick Smith. The answer to that question, they write, is not as simple as we'd like, and it's not as easy as we'd hope, but it's too important to ignore. So in their new book, Tox In, Tox Out, Laurie and Smith give practical advice for removing toxic chemicals from our bodies and our homes. They write, quote, "Managing what we absorb, breathe, eat, and drink is the first line of defense against toxins like phthalates, parabens, pesticides, and volatile organic compounds," end quote. And Bruce Laurie joins us to talk about these tips. Bruce is best known for his work in connecting environmental issues to human health through his research on mercury pollution and for initiating the campaign to shut down coal-fired power plants in Ontario, Canada. Bruce is president of the Ivy Foundation, a charitable foundation that supports environmental sustainability. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. As someone who's obsessed with these issues, I really enjoyed your book. And I wonder if we can start off by talking about what really prompted this book. As I mentioned, you and your co-author, Rick Smith, wrote Slow Death by Rubber Duck, and you traveled all over Canada and the United States, and you were always asked the same question, how do we get this stuff out of our bodies? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. And that, in fact, that is quite legitimately why we decided to write the book. We, in fact, you know, I think we start the book off with a story from Australia when we were speaking there, and someone, you know, asked the question. You know, so we in the first book did all these experiments with chemicals going into our bodies. So we asked the question. So you know, you've got all these chemicals in you. What do you do to get them out of you? And you know, after we'd heard that question, you know, several dozen times, and each time Rick and I kind of stared at each other blankly, frankly, not really knowing the best answer, we kind of figured we'd better look into it. And it turns out there was enough information to make it worth us doing the research and writing a book about it.
And over the years, we've done a lot of shows about these chemicals that are not tested. And we've done shows about efforts to try to get the government to do something about it. And you write that over the years, and even since you wrote Slow Death, the scientific evidence linking these chemicals to human disease has become even more convincing. There are studies, for example, by the Environmental Working Group that found 232 toxic chemicals in the umbilical cord blood of 10 babies. There's so much more research now. What is it telling us?
Yeah, exactly. And there's really two things that are happening. So the Environmental Working Group study, and they're, you know, they're a fantastic organization working on these issues out of Washington. What they were doing is just showing that we have all of these chemicals in our bodies even when we're born. So, you know, we're born with, you know, in some cases hundreds of synthetic chemicals in us. And then the other studies that are really making it even more disconcerting is, so not only do we know we have all these chemicals in us, but we're finding more and more evidence of what kind of harm these chemicals are causing. So everything from, you know, obesity to thyroid problems, cancer, ADHD, you know, there's just this, all of these epidemics, you know, childhood asthma that we're seeing around the United States and around the globe in industrial nations are being increasingly linked to the use of these synthetic chemicals that alter our hormone system as we're developing.
Your book is, you have about 30 pages of notes just to let people know that this is where you found the documentation and the research. Because as you know, I mean, there's a lot of pushback from the industry saying, well, you know, if you use this in small doses, it's not really that bad. Or if the word phthalate is at the bottom of the ingredient list, there's not that much in it. Or no, organic food actually isn't better than conventional food. So how do you deal with all of these studies that contradict each other? I mean, it's really hard for the average person to keep up with all this information.
Yeah, very much so. And that really, for Rick and I, it was the goal for us was to try to distill a lot of complicated research and then actually do experiments on ourselves. And the novel part of our new book is we do experiments on other people as well.
Right.
So we can tell the story not just as a scientist reading, you know, some scientific study, but really as people every day. You know, Rick and I have kids. We're making these kinds of choices for our families, and we just wanted to try to convert all of this complex science and boil it down into a way that hopefully is easy to absorb, and you know, as easy as the chemicals, and not too difficult for people who really just want to figure out, well, how could I make my family safer and my home healthier, and make sure I'm not buying stuff that's going to be harmful.
The other interesting thing you write about is what happens when we are exposed to a mixture of toxic chemicals in our bodies all at once. And you say that it has a more profound and complex effect than the chemical industry would like us to believe.
Yeah, so just imagine we're in a situation right now where, as you noted, there are about 80,000 chemicals in use today, and we've not done proper health and safety testing on 90% of those chemicals, and that's just trying to understand one individual chemical. Now imagine that we know that any of us are going to have, you know, from 100 to 300 of these chemicals in our bodies interacting. We frankly have no clue what those chemicals are doing to us. And so, as you said, industry likes to downplay it. They point out that these are very small quantities of chemicals. But the other thing that the new research is showing is that it isn't so much the quantity of the chemical that's problematic. It's the time in which the chemical is introduced in our body. So if we're being exposed either, you know, as an infant or in the fetus to chemicals that actually mimic our hormone system, then these chemicals are doing things that can alter how our body develops later in life. It can affect our reproductive system. It can even contribute to, you know, transgenerational problems. So a mother could be exposed to a chemical, and the harm is in the child when the child tries to conceive and realizes they have some sort of reproductive problem. So these are challenging issues for scientists to get around and challenging issues for regulators to get around, but it's really it's no excuse for industry just to say that they're safe.
Well, it's also U.S. law has a lot to do with this, right? Because as you note, U.S. law and Canadian law allows companies to put dozens of secret ingredients in their products without disclosing them on the label. So as long as a manufacturer can make the case that a synthetic chemical is a component of their formulation, like a fragrance formulation, they don't have to list it. I don't think a lot of people realize that. So even if phthalates are in your product, the company doesn't have to reveal that?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what we hear from people is so often is this idea that, well, surely the government's doing the proper testing. They wouldn't let companies put these things in if they were harmful, or, you know, or we've got labels so we know what these things are. But, you know, unfortunately, in both Canada and the U.S., we have very poor labeling laws, and it does let companies get away with kind of hiding these toxic chemicals buried in the names of things like, you know, perfume or fragrance or things like that. And cosmetics in particular are very poorly labeled and can have all kinds of concoctions that that companies will simply say are proprietary, and therefore they don't need to be listed.
We recently did a show about labeling because nowadays there are so many labels on foods like gluten-free and vegan and organic and natural and all of this. And we talked about how the word natural has been so diluted. But is it safe to assume that if you do buy a, quote, green product, they're not putting in phthalates without you knowing it?
You know, I think these days things are getting much better, and I attribute this to a combination of you know, organizations that are doing great work on the ground. You know, like for example, the Breast Cancer Fund, based in San Francisco, who are really trying to make us aware of what's out there. And so, if you're a company now, particularly a company with a large global brand, you can't risk your reputation by, you know, hiding something or lying about something. So if you actually say it's green, I'm more and more convinced these days that it's green. And then, of course, we have But you have to still be careful about what it is that you're reading. As you said, the word natural is meaningless. So when it comes to certain things, particularly foods, you want to make sure that they have a proper organic designation. So the USDA organic label, I think, is going to give you a good indication that that's genuinely organic.
I'm speaking with Bruce Laurie about his new book, Talks In, Talks Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. He wrote it with Rick Smith, and they decided to write this book after they wrote The Slow Death by Rubber Duck. And when they traveled around the country and in Canada, the main question people asked was, well, if we can't avoid these chemicals, what can we do to get them out of our bodies after they get in? So they decided to write this book to answer that question and also to let us know what we can do to avoid getting them in the first place. And if you have any questions for Bruce, we'd love to hear from you. What sort of chemicals do you try to avoid? There's been so much awareness raised over the last 5 years, thanks to so many organizations like the Environmental Working Group, for example. So if you have any questions or comments about chemicals, products, the food you use, what the U.S. law says, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you work in the food or the personal care product industry, what changes are you seeing because of citizen demand? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. So you write a lot about phthalates, there's sodium lauryl sulfates, parabens. Which chemical personally concerns you the most? What do you try to avoid?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I think it's getting to the point now, and I use this certain shampoo that I found. I quite like it. And the great thing, I look at the back of the label, and it says no phthalates, no parabens, no lauryl sulfate, 70% organic plant-derived products in it. So, I think it's hard to just say which one. Of the chemicals out there, though, I will say one that really kind of irks me, and it's triclosan. And that's a chemical that is put in antibacterial soaps and sanitizers and deodorants, and now it's in things like sportswear and sandals and stuff. So it's an antibacterial chemical, and the U.S. FDA actually just a couple months ago came out with a statement, and quite frankly, it sounded like they just quoted our first book, saying that triclosan is ineffective at the concentrations that it's being used in products, that it is contributing to antibacterial resistance, which is a serious problem for our society, and that it's also linked to thyroid problems, and that companies really have to look pretty hard if they're using triclosan properly or not. So I think hopefully that triclosan's on its way out, because it's just a really dumb chemical.
Hmm. Well, has the U.S. government done anything to better test chemicals and do the research that's required or needed since there's been so much outrage and calls from various groups to do more? I mean, have we seen any significant changes over the last 5 years?
Well, I would say the progress is pretty slow at the federal level. What we're seeing more and more are state governments that are taking action on these things, because the federal government isn't taking enough action. So, and that's, that's a phenomenon that's actually happening around the world where, for whatever reason, I don't quite understand it, but the federal government seem incapable of taking these issues on, and so it's left to the smaller jurisdictions, sometimes municipalities or states or in Canada provinces, and so the good news is actually we are seeing progress on certain chemicals, as I said, at the state. I mean, California, of course, is a global leader on this stuff. And then we're also seeing companies take voluntary action. So bisphenol A, BPA plastic that we wrote about in the first book, Canada, the first country to ban it in baby bottles. And right now, it's almost being completely removed from all plastics in use. And that's entirely voluntary. We're seeing, Johnson & Johnson made a big announcement on getting phthalates and parabens out of their products. Avon made a big announcement the other day. Walmart, we're just seeing more and more that governments aren't doing their jobs, but companies are responding to consumer pressure.
What evidence did you find about the connection between phthalates and breast cancer, or parabens? I'm sorry, parabens and breast cancer.
Yeah, so there's increasing evidence that parabens are linked to breast cancer, and it's one of those, and as you mentioned, phthalates, increasing evidence of phthalates being linked to prostate cancer. So in many of these instances, the chemicals themselves are mimicking hormones, and they can mimic hormones like estrogen, which if you have higher levels of estrogen, that's going to enhance the likelihood of getting breast cancer. So there is research out there that's increasingly linking these kinds of chemicals to various and specific cancers.
You have some pretty shocking numbers in your book about cancer. You write, over 40% of kids born in the United States today will be diagnosed with cancer at some point in their life. In short, nearly one out of every two children will be diagnosed with cancer. Stop and think about that. For every family of four, a family like, I should see if you or Rick wrote this one, but you write that, I mean, these are shocking numbers. This is over 550,000 Americans dying of cancer every year, 75,000 Canadians, 40,000 Australians.
Yeah, it is shocking, and you know, of course, not all of those cancers are due to environmental contaminants, but we do know increasingly that many of them are, and up to half of the cancers are estimated to be a result of environmental exposure as opposed to genetics.
Don't you think part of the problem is that we can't really trace why people get cancer? We can't specifically say it's because you drank this about polluted water, or you know, you had polluted air in your area, or you ate this when you were young. I mean, isn't that part of the problem?
That is a huge part of the problem, and it actually goes all the way back to why governments are having trouble regulating these things. So when we first set up environmental regulations, when you know the Clean Air Act in the U.S. and the Clean Water Act were legislated, they were to deal with things like coal-fired power plants and sewage treatment plants and chemical companies dumping, you know, really nasty, huge amounts of nasty chemicals into our air and water. And it was very easy to point to those chemicals are killing those fish, or those chemicals are causing cancer or whatever. Today, when we're looking at you know, minute quantities that could be, you know, in our soap or in our shampoo or in kids' toys, and you know, and some people respond differently to these chemicals, we can't, you know, there's no smoking gun. And so the entire regulatory system isn't structured to be able to deal with these kinds of chemicals. And it just, you know, I'm sympathetic in some ways to the fact that this is a very complex complex challenge that we have. But what it really suggests then is that if we suspect some of these chemicals of being harmful, then we should just stop using them, as opposed to let's continue using them and see how many people get cancer.
Bruce Laurie is author of Tox In, Tox Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about the everyday products and foods you eat and use? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from George in San Francisco. Hi, George. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thinking of reports that we started hearing from researchers in the 1970s and 80s, that they had found that when they were covering this territory that you're describing, Bruce, they had products which went on the market which were laced with lethal chemicals, toxic material that shouldn't be on the market. In fact, it was byproducts from various chemical manufacturing which resulted in backlog of toxic material in the holding ponds, containers, tanks at these various manufacturing sites. And they did not want to have to keep that stuff around, but they couldn't put it in a dump unless it was a Class A certified number one dump, which cost them a lot of bucks. But they found that they could get a license for a product to put on the shelf in your supermarket using the same material, and they could get rid of it by putting it in products, perhaps bug killers or other things, or perhaps things that are even more, less obvious. So we just wonder if that mechanism is still operating and if you've encountered it.
Yeah, I've certainly heard of that. And I, you know, to be honest, I don't know if it's still still being used by companies or to what extent. It does point out to a huge loophole in the in consumer product safety legislation, in that, you know, basically as we've been saying all along here, the testing requirements are just too minimal to ensure safety of these products. Another, you know, related story that as you're talking reminds me, you know, Rick wrote in our first book about brominated flame retardants and the whole story of the bromine industry and how, you know, they used to add bromine to car gasoline as an anti-knock agent, and then that got banned, and then so the bromine industry is just trying to figure out how do we sell our bromine, and they come up with brominated flame retardants and then go around the world convincing everyone that, you know, they're going to self-combust if they don't have flame retardants in their pajamas, and that's basically how we got brominated flame retardants all over the place.
And studies have linked the chemicals to cancer and fertility problems, right?
Exactly, yes.
California, organizations and activists have been fighting for about a decade to get the state to change their furniture flammability standards, and California just did it late last year.
Right, exactly. Yes, that's correct. In fact, it was because California is usually ahead on the toxic side. Sometimes the health and safety side, which they were kind of ahead on, was creating this impasse between, you know, is it health and safety in terms of fire or health and safety in terms of toxicity?
You have this really amazing story about a Brazilian blowout. I don't use Brazilian blowout, but I know people who do. And can you just tell us about this? Because it's just such a shocking, incredible story. First off, what is Brazilian blowout?
Yeah, so this is a product that's, and I'll preface this by saying Rick wrote and researched this chapter, so I'm not the Brazilian blowout expert, but you know, it's a product that's used as a hair straightener, and it's made of formaldehyde, which is a highly toxic and cancer-causing chemical, and it was literally being used at such high concentrations that it would combust and cause huge huge issues.
Well, people got sick using this, right? And then
and then
there was a settlement because of all of the illnesses.
Yeah, so the women that were working in the hair salons were becoming very sick, and it's still, although my understanding is it's still being used in certain places, so it's...
Right, so Rick writes that the company GIB LLC was forced to pay a settlement of $600,000 to the state of California, but Brazilian blowout is still on sale, and he says if you wanted one of the starkest examples of the abject failure of the regulatory system to ensure the safety of personal care products, Brazilian blowout would surely be it.
Exactly, yeah.
So what can people do about this? I mean, we'll talk about that after the break and more in depth, but if these products are harmful to us and yet they're still on sale, even though there's been a settlement, I mean, I guess that's why it's so important to arm ourselves with this information.
Yeah, exactly. And that it's sometimes it's hard to explain why some products, you know, it seems, you know, governments and manufacturers will act on it quickly and deal with it in the appropriate way, and in other cases not at all, like Brazilian blowout. And I don't really understand, you know, why there seems to be this variation in the response, but it's
well, you know, we'll talk about that more after the break. We'll also talk about your findings on organic food. We're speaking with Bruce Laurie, author of Tox In, Tox Out.
And I'm Allie Budner, a producer of Your Call, here with General Manager Matt Martin, taking a rare moment to come on the air to talk to you about why these kinds of shows really matter.
That's right. And we are in the midst of our public radio party asking for your support. And Allie, we have a challenge during this hour of Your Call. Constance Bernstein, a listener in San Francisco, said, I will put forward $500 if 20 people become members or renew their membership in KALW in this hour of Your Call. 20 calls or clicks at 800-525-9917 or going to KALW.org means an additional $500 for local public radio.
And 20, that's really not that much for this actually amazing book. This book, I want to just let you know, this book in the end of it has a page where there's a list of top 10 things that you can do to lead a healthier life. They actually encourage you to rip this page out of the book and put
it's
it on your fridge.
It's got a little scissors line on it.
And it basically talks about how to be smart about your consumer choices, how to basically educate people around you. It's an incredible book and really useful resource.
And yours for a $120 contribution to KALW. That's $10 a month to support local public radio, this program, your call, and everything you hear on KALW.
The voices that we hear on your call are educational, informative, and we try to keep them fun, too. We try to keep you entertained, laughing, interested. So if you support that kind of radio, please call 1-800-525-9917.
800-525-9917 or KALW.org. It's these kind of conversations when you're really thankful for non-commercial, local, grassroots independent media, because we don't have to say, oh, are we going to offend a corporate sponsor? Because we're not dependent on corporate sponsors. We're dependent on listeners one at a time getting involved. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Now, back to the show.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our weekly media roundtable, and our guest will be The Guardian's Luke Harding, author of The Snowden Files. And then on Monday, we'll be joined by New York Times journalist Mark Leibovich. He will join us to talk about his book, This Town. If you're a political junkie, you'll definitely want to hear this because he doesn't hold back. He names names and talks about how so many politicians are in the pockets of corporations and talks about what they do together at their dinner parties at night and what they talk about. It's a really interesting read, so you'll want to join us for that. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are joined by Bruce Laurie. He's an environmentalist in Canada, out with a new book, Talks In, Talks Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. He wrote this book with Rick Smith, and they are authors of the international bestseller, Slow Death by Rubber Duck. And when they wrote that book, when they were on book tour, the question they heard over and over again is, how can we get these chemicals out of our bodies and our homes? And so that's why they wrote Talks In, Talks Out. And if you have a question or a comment for Bruce, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And let's hear from Max in Berkeley. Hi, Max. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for a good program. I have a couple of questions. That Brazilian product you talked about, the hair straightener, hair treatment product?
Yes.
Could it be that women of color, black women, are particularly impacted by that product? That's my first question. And my second question has to do with this subtle interaction between pollution, certainly at low concentrations, and our genetic makeup. And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you very much for a good program.
Thank you, Max. Bruce?
Yeah, I think, the first question, I can't really answer what the breakdown is in terms of who's using it. I happen to know my daughter who uses not that product, but she uses a hair straightener every day, and is not African American, but it's quite likely that there is, there would be some enhanced, use in the African American community. And I actually missed the last part of the second question.
What research is being done around the connection between pollutants and genetics?
Oh, that's a great question. There's interesting research being done now on the idea that this is a whole field called epigenetics, and it's really looking at how these chemicals affect what's called our gene expression, and it answers in some ways why, the question you asked earlier on, why do some people get cancer and other people not get cancer? Why, for example, we know someone that smokes a pack of cigarettes every day their entire life and they live to be 80 and someone else gets cancer when they're 50. And one of the answers seems to be this whole idea of epigenetics, where the certain chemicals can trigger our genes to either switch on or switch off or mutate in different ways, and different people respond differently. So that is definitely a significant growing issue. And even in the detox field, when I was speaking with experts that specialize in detox, they almost all said that one of the first things they do is try to understand the genetic and not just genetic, but genetic and biophysical chemical makeup of an individual so that they can understand how their bodies are going to respond either to the toxicity or to the kinds of treatments to detox. And so more and more we're getting to this conclusion that people are really very much individuals, like they're biologically and chemically individual. And mm-hmm. so we can't just it's not just a cookie cutter thing.
Right. Well, thank you for calling, Max. We have an email from Richard who says, I'm wondering about plastic bottles with the number 2 and the recycle symbol. Is it better to reuse older bottles as much of the hormone mimicking chemicals are then washed out or already leached out? For example, washing them hard with hot water. Glass bottles just break in my rugged life. What are your thoughts on this, Bruce? I've read that you shouldn't reuse plastic bottles at all because there's so much bacteria in the bottom of the bottle that cannot be washed out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and it's impossible, of course, to avoid plastic entirely in our day, but I think to the extent that you can, it's a good thing. A number 2 plastic isn't so bad as some of the other plastics. And what does happen, though, with plastic is it tends to break down over time. You know, exposure to sunlight, exposure to hot water, things like that will start to corrode the plastic and cause it to leach chemicals. So I think you don't want to be reusing plastic bottles too much.
Richard, you might want to try, there's a glass bottle that is sold as a drinking bottle, and it has a protection. I don't know what the product is. It's probably some kind of chemical or plastic around it, but it protects the glass from breaking. And these are in most health food stores, and I've used one for a long time, and they're pretty durable. So you might want to check that out.
And of course, there's stainless steel.
Right, and stainless steel, yeah. So thank you for writing in. Let's hear next from Lynn in San Francisco. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much for the show. And I'm happy to say I'm going to meet your challenge today and donate today.
Thank you.
I have a concern. I've been involved in, sort of peripherally involved, with a fight in San Francisco over children's soccer fields. You know, specifically the Beach Chalet is now going to be on the ballot. But the city has accepted private funds from a funder who's given us crumbled up rubber tires, and almost all the soccer fields in the city have now been converted. And my grandson plays. I have a son, frankly, that has had a brain tumor, and a 52-year-old daughter that now has cancer. Mm. And what has surprised me and really, truly blown my mind is this is supposedly the greenest city in North America. And I have personally gone to the California Coastal Commission with comments. I read books, Raising Elijah, I highly recommend. And what I think is the most shocking to me, besides doing it, is telling kids that it's safer or telling families. You know, this city, it's really quite a epic scandal, has a precautionary principle, and yet they had to, you know, it's been a fight every step of the way to get a flawed environmental review. And I personally, you know, don't know what the future bodes for us. If in a city like this, we can't get at least an honest policy discussion going about how even to protect ourselves. And now I understand, and I've seen in the paper, the public schools are thinking about putting this in. It reminds me of the play structures in the 70s that were toxic that they used as a dumping ground for arsenic. And I personally really believe, and I get this from experts far greater than me, is that these crumbled up rubber tires can't be put in landfills, and they needed to put them in playgrounds because they needed to get rid of them.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Lynn. And you might want to contact our news department about this, too, because it sounds like some investigative work needs to be done here. But, Bruce, can you comment on the old tires? And then, I mean, there have been a number of articles written over the years about toxic playgrounds.
Yeah, in fact, on the toxic playground issue was quite large in the city I live in as well, in Toronto, many years ago, and you know the issue of arsenic in the as a wood preservative. But the rubber tires, I'm not really familiar with them being used in playgrounds. It seems strange to me. I know that there are people that are advocating their use in roads, and I don't know how widely used they are in asphalt in the United States, but I think that's kind of a better use for them, and it doesn't make sense to me that you would be putting synthetic plastic, which really are what tires are made of these days, into kids' playgrounds.
I believe it's crumbled up, broken up tires that are put under the synthetic turf.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Huh.
So
this is when you have a football field that's got
exactly
an artificial turf on it, and
right,
you're just putting it underneath for cushioning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Lynn. It sounds like some investigative work and some exposure needs to happen there. So thanks for calling in. Let's go next to Donna in Oakland. Hi, Donna. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I want to make a quick comment about hair straighteners. Black women have been using them for, I can't remember how long, 20s or soon earlier, and I'm surprised that there's a lot of backlash about the Brazilian blowout because that's a recent product.
It is.
Yeah, and I'd be curious to know what studies have been done on the health effects of the chemical straighteners for black people. I used to use them when I was young, and Oakland probably is on the forefront of natural hair care for black women. And secondly, I want to talk about the toys my 5 and 6 year old play with. They're a lot of times fad toys, except for Legos. Legos are always popular. But we get Benny Babies, we get American Girl dolls, we get all these things coming in and out sooner than anyone can detect if there's a problem. Maybe the fad is gone. Plastic toys, stuffed things. How do we even know what to look for, what to avoid?
Well, thank you for that. On the Brazilian blowout, I mean, there's such an amazing section in Bruce and Rick's book about it, and it focused on a hairdresser, Jennifer Aker, who put the Brazilian blowout on her hair, and within minutes, her eyes were burning, her throat was burning, her lungs were burning, she was having a hard time breathing, and then OSHA began testing the product, including the one in her salon, and discovered that Brazilian blowout contained about up to 10% of formaldehyde, which is a cancer-causing agent. So you might want to actually get the book. It's a really interesting section of the book. And I'm sure you can search for it, too, because they did have a settlement in California, the company. Do you want to also comment on the toy question, Bruce?
Yeah. And I think just on the formaldehyde question, it's,
sure,
you know, if you have 10% of a chemical that is widely known to be carcinogenic, then you don't really need to do a whole lot of research on the product itself because 10% of it is formaldehyde. And toys, well, we of course, with Slow Death by Rubber Duck, the whole point of that book was to highlight chemicals that are hidden in everything around us, including kids' toys and things like phthalates that are found in soft, rubbery toys like rubber ducks. So it's something that, I think you make an excellent point that, you know, these toys, which are fads, come on the market very quickly, and it's going to take a while in some cases to identify what chemicals are in them. I would say the good news there is that there has been progress in Canada and the U.S. around regulating the kinds of chemicals that are in kids' toys, and usually that's the first place where chemicals start getting banned. There usually are always slightly stiffer requirements for the kinds of chemicals that go in children's toys. So it's one of the reasons why Rick and I also recommend, you know, we always like to hand things down, and we got a lot of hand-me-down things with our kids, but sometimes with toys, you don't want the hand-me-down toys because the newer toys are going to more likely be less toxic than the older ones.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Donna. Today, we're speaking with Bruce Laurie, author of Tox In, Tox Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. And we're going to get back to calls in just a minute. But, Bruce, I wanted to quickly ask you about your findings on organic food, because this was another fascinating section of the book. And you spoke with Chuck Benbrook, professor in Washington State University Center for Sustaining Agriculture and Natural Resources. And there have been a lot of studies out that say eating organic is no better than conventional. But he says That's actually not true. There's absolutely no way to escape the conclusion, based on a mountain of data, that consumers who seek out organic food to reduce their own personal or family's exposure to risky pesticides are getting a significant return on their investment. They're lowering their risk by approximately 80-fold. What was that based on, and what does 80-fold actually mean?
So I think the conclusion is clear, and in fact, you've got a local university in your region that came out with a study last year suggesting that there wasn't any value to organic food. But what happens with some of these studies is they focus on the wrong thing. So in the case of this Stanford study, they were looking at the nutrient levels of organic food versus non-organic food. And so, you know, if you've got potassium in broccoli, it's not really going to change a lot whether you put pesticides on the broccoli or you don't. The issue is you've put pesticides on them. So people are buying organic food because they don't want pesticides. The study that we did in the book, we actually got 9 kids, and those 9 kids over a 12-day period, these were kids who only ever ate non-organic food. So for the first 4 days of this 12-day experiment, they ate their regular non-organic food diet, and then for 4 days they switched to organic food and then went back to the non-organic food for the last 4 days. And the pesticide levels in their bodies dropped on average 2/3. Wow. Once they switched to the organic diet, and then shot up again when they went back to the non-organic diet. So almost all of the studies that look at the primary issue for why people buy organic food, and that's because you get less chemical pesticides in your body, those studies are all quite conclusive in a positive way that organic food is worth buying. So, we also have the benefit now of the prices of organic food coming down significantly. So in many cases, in fact, oddly enough, the other day I was out looking at mushrooms, and the organic mushrooms, exact same looking mushrooms for the exact same size container, the organic ones were cheaper than the non-organic. I don't know why, but there's a couple of things there. Like you can, and based on the research we did and the experiment we did, you can guarantee that you will have lower levels of pesticides in your body if you eat organic food. And we know now, or we've seen, that the prices are coming down significantly. So it's a good thing to do.
It was incredible to read about the effects that the organic and non-organic had on these children. They took urine samples over the course of the study. What did scientists tell you about the findings?
This kind of research hasn't really been done before very, very often, in terms of actually trying to see whether or not you can, like, literally watch the pesticide levels go down when you switch to an organic diet. So, the one researcher that we worked with in the UK was predicting for us in advance that we would see results like this. And in fact, she just came out with her own similar study a couple weeks ago that in fact replicated our results, which is always a good thing, right? You want to see that multiple people are doing the same kind of study and coming up with the same results.
So you wrote this book to let us know what we can do to avoid getting these chemicals in the first place, which is really hard, and also to get them out. And so let's go next to Diana in Marin. Hi, Diana. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Oh, hi. You're on the air.
Okay. Well, you said we would talk after the break about how to get them out. I've been waiting all hour to hear that.
Well, that's where we're going right now. So Bruce, what are the best ways to get them out?
Yeah, sounds like a good segue.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So when we did the research, we found that there aren't a lot of really great ways of getting chemicals out of your body, but there are things that we can do to help our body's natural detox systems operate better. And, you know, it's going to sound like all the things that anyone is going to tell you to do just to maintain a healthy lifestyle, but it turns out eating more vegetables, drinking lots of water, exercising, these are all things that enhance our body's detox systems. Eating, more both soluble fiber and insoluble fiber. And the one thing that we found was that, you know, the idea that you can say eat crappy stuff for 51 weeks of the year and then think that, you know, if you have a blender broccoli diet for 1 week, you know, that's going to detox you. Like, that doesn't work. So those 48-hour or, you know, five-day cleanse diets, you know, they're not, for the most part, not going to harm you, but they're not really going to significantly reduce the levels of toxins in your body. You want to be thinking about it as something that you're going to be doing every day, because you're ingesting and absorbing toxins every day. In terms of two very specific things that work well, one is called chelation therapy, but that really is only for someone that is diagnosed with high heavy metal toxicity, in particular something like mercury or lead. And so you can go through this procedure, should be overseen by a health professional, where an intravenous solution is run through your body, and that intravenous solution actually picks up the heavy metals and removes them from your body. And I did an experiment on myself using chelation, and you could see anywhere from about a 5 to 20 times increase in the amount of heavy metals leaving my body just in the day that I was doing the chelation therapy. The other one that is interesting, and more health professionals are turning to, is sauna therapy. And that's literally just, you know, sitting in a sauna, sweating profusely for a reasonable amount of time. And a lot of them are using these infrared saunas, so your bodies don't heat up too much, but you still sweat a lot. And it turns out that you can actually sweat out things like bisphenol A, so like BPA plastic, you know, sweats out of your pores. And so those were two things that are very specific. And then we looked at a whole range of things that simply don't work, like ionic foot baths, and where there's zero evidence that they actually...
But we should say, if you do the sauna, be very careful, because you passed out because you were in there for too long and the heat was just too high. So be very careful, right?
If you
go into a sauna. And also, you collected your sweat, which was really interesting. The other thing is, you write about Peter Sullivan in your book. He was one of the... He was involved in Netscape way back when, and he's a fairly wealthy man. And so he has the money to be able to find out, you know, why he and his family were dealing with some problems. He had the money to take the mercury out of his cavities and to have these expensive tests. But for people who don't have access to that or don't have the money to do that, how are they able to trace problems back to whether it's mercury or a chemical and then take action like he was able to do?
Yeah, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's more of a preventive thing. So there's some people that are going to have very serious serious noticeable effects, like the case with Peter Sullivan, and he really wanted to figure out what was going wrong as his health was declining. As you said, you know, he was in a position that he was able to do a lot of research and a lot of testing himself, which most of us can't. But there are more and more natural paths and alternative health physicians that can help out, that isn't hugely expensive. And I think really, though, the message in the book is that we just need to shift our lifestyle so that we start moving toward a diet and a lifestyle that is both avoiding and reducing chemicals. And I think with the book, just the basic things like doing the exercising, buying cleaner products, eating organic food, drinking water, exercising, eating more vegetables. Like, it's kind of as you said, our top 10 detox list, but those basic things, we can guarantee you will have lower levels of toxins in your body, which, you know, doesn't answer the question, what can you necessarily afford if you've got some really serious problem, but it's a recipe to try to prevent getting into that situation.
A few more things. Eat more vegetables. Avoid wacky quick fix detoxes. Optimize your body's natural detox mechanism by adopting a detox lifestyle. Buy less. Buy green. And support politicians who believe in a greener economy. Well, Bruce, I want to thank you so much for your research, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. That is Bruce Laurie. He is author of Tox In, Tox Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening. And I'm joined in studio by KALW General Manager Matt Martin. Hi, Matt.
Great to be here, Rose, and to have been here to listen to that conversation you had with Bruce Laurie. We're in the midst of our public radio party, hence the music. But, you know, here on KALW and at Your Call, we can talk about serious stuff and talk about how we make change. And you know what? That's something to celebrate. There's a space for real discussion, real information, and talking. I love the subtitle of this book because it's talking about getting toxins out of our bodies, our individual situation, and how we do it in the world.
Right.
That is what we're about here at Your Call. Your support at 800-525-9917 keeps that conversation going. And Rose, we do have a challenge. In the next 4 minutes, before we go to the next program, we need to have 20 people call 800-525-9917 or go to KALW.org to allow us to get $500 additional dollars from a generous listener, Constance Bernstein, in San Francisco.
Thank you, Constance. You can give us a call at 800-525-9917 or go online to KALW.org. As Bruce said, it's about arming ourselves with information, and that is one of our mottos at Your Call. Support that kind of independent radio. KALW.org, 800-525-9917. For $120, we will send you Tox In, Tox Out. I'm personally obsessed with these issues, and I loved this book. I'm going to give it to my mom, maybe on Mother's Day.
There you go.
But you should get this book and then hand it out because it's really accessible, full of great information. And that is why we need a show like Your Call, so we can spend an hour on an issue like this. Support that kind of radio, 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
Every weekday, Rose and her guests open up a conversation with you, open the lines, and they were lit up today, Rose.
Yeah.
People are interested in this stuff. We've had a lot of folks stepping forward to support this kind of programming. We had June Broomer in Oakland, Carl Kuhlman in Menlo Park, and Michael Penza, a new member in San Francisco. If you listen to Your Call, but perhaps you've never become a member of KALW, perhaps you've never given to public radio ever before, now is a great time with this challenge ahead. This means you could help us get an additional $500 to make sure this kind of programming is on the air.
KALW.org. You can also call one of our volunteers at 800-525-9917. For a $120 contribution, we will send you this new book, Tox In, Tox Out. It also focuses on GMOs, really interesting information about how all eyes were on California. California for Prop 37. Great information that you'll want to know about and share. 800-525-9917. We're having a really good morning so far. Thanks for all of your support. If you can afford $120, we'll send you the book, the new member level 50. Maybe you can afford a dollar a day, but whatever it is, it helps us get to our goal. And we will get an extra $500 thanks to Constance Bernstein if we can get 20 calls or clicks in the next minute. 800-525-9917 or online KALW.org.
There, thank you so much for those calls. I see there's an open line at 800-525-9917, KALW.org. Conversations that help you think about how you want to live, how to keep yourself healthy, but how we as a society,
yep,
as human beings living on this earth, we have such a huge impact. The decisions we make are so important, and we can only make good decisions if we converse and share information. 800-525-9917, less than a minute to get to this challenge. We need a push right here, Rose, at KALW.org, 800-525-9917. And let's make it very clear, at any level you give, you help us move toward making that 20-call challenge.
800-525-9917. We are able to have these conversations because you support us. As Matt said earlier, it's corporate-free radio, so we can talk about what is really going on in terms of chemicals, the corporations. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
KALW. San Francisco has been around since 1941 with the support of this community. We think that makes for better, independent, grassroots, involved, engaged broadcasting. Your support, your participation is what makes it work.
And as we see more money flowing to politicians, we really need independent media to keep everybody in check and to arm you with information so you can make the right choices and then spread it around. That's the other thing that we love to do here, spread the information. Support that kind of radio, 800-525-9917. $120 will send you this book. You can also go online to KALW.org.
Celebrate independent media. Keep it strong. 800-525-9917. KALW.org. Thanks to the folks on the line now. Please join them. Help us make this challenge. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
Thank you.